All right, good morning. Thank you all for coming. My name is Tyler Razek. I'm a PhD student in Greg Swords' lab at Texas A&M University. I'm presenting in this session because they wouldn't let me compete in the student competition twice. So thank you all for letting me present amongst y'all. Today I'm going to be talking to you about a component of my dissertation research where we're using population genomics to kind of improve or make recommendations for insect resistant management with regards to a newly developed transgenic that has some effectiveness against cotton flea hopper. And over the course of this research, we've actually kind of uncovered some interesting new dynamics about the cotton flea hopper and their patterns of host use that we didn't really expect, but we kind of accidentally found these cool findings. So as Dr. Bowling mentioned, the cotton flea hopper is an early season pest of cotton primarily, has over 100 known host plants, including commercial cotton, and commercial cotton is actually not its preferred host. So although the nymphs and adults do attack these small developing squares in terminal growth, it's kind of taking advantage of this resource as its preferred host plant senesce. The damage, as previously mentioned, is generally inconspicuous, can cause yield loss, apparently not so much in Corpus Christi this year. But it can delay plant maturity, and these insects may also vector boll rot. So they're potentially a pretty important host in some areas. Overwintering hosts play a really key role in their life cycle. The primarily woolly croton is the most important overwintering host in areas where it occurs. And this is a really interesting plant because flea hoppers from many different host plants and from cotton, they all kind of congregate on woolly croton. They lay their eggs there, and then those eggs overwinter in the stem and hatch in the spring. So as I mentioned, there's a new transgenic cotton cultivar that's been developed that may provide some protection from cotton flea hopper feeding pressure. And from an insect-resistant management standpoint, there's some concern about host-associated differentiation in the species, where you have certain genotypes that are associated with certain host plants and may not mix with other individuals of that species. So from an IRM standpoint, it's really important to know if there's gene flow between populations that are feeding on cotton that may be exposed to the strong selective pressure of this transgenic and those that are feeding on non-toxic refuge plants. Because if there's gene flow between these populations, then that'll delay the development of resistance. And it makes sense that a good candidate or a good hypothesis for a natural refuge would be this woolly croton because it is that year-end site of overwintering. And while we do know that individuals from different host plants and from cotton are all moving to woolly croton at the end of the year, what we don't know is if they're actually mating, if there's actually gene flow at that point. So that's kind of what we're testing for this project. The main goal of my project is to resolve the population genomic structure of the cotton flea hopper, specifically in the Brazos Valley, in order to better inform this transgenic resistance management. Specifically, we're going to estimate gene flow between populations feeding on cotton and those overwintering on croton. Null hypothesis that there's high gene flow, limited or no support for host-associated differentiation. And then the alternative would be that there's limited gene flow and some evidence of HAD. The second objective is to determine if woolly croton serves as this natural refuge, where the null hypothesis would be that woolly croton and cotton do share genotypes, genotypes of cotton flea hopper. And the first alternative hypothesis would be that woolly croton and cotton have different genotypes that are associated with them. So to carry out this study, as I mentioned, we focused on the Brazos Valley. We have a focal, where's the mouse? Here. We have a focal cotton field that we studied. We collected flea hoppers from there in June, July, and August. And then we had five croton sites where we collected, we actually collected the overwintering eggs and then reared those out for a total of 200 individuals. We focused on eggs and nymphs for this study because previous studies, specifically Antwi et al. 2015, they used AFLP markers, which are different from the genetic markers that we're going to use in this study. But they found a signal of HAD when they analyzed nymphs. But when they looked at adults, they could not find this signal of HAD. So that was a pretty important consideration for us, was to focus on these eggs and nymphs that we knew where they were coming from. We knew their population of origin. And since we wanted to be very careful to detect any HAD that might be there, we specifically focused on these eggs and nymphs. So we used a population genomics approach to answer this question about gene flow. Population genomics is just population genetics on a whole genome scale. So we use unbiased molecular markers from across the entire genome to genotype individuals and resolve the population structure. This has an advantage over traditional population genetics methods because you get orders of magnitude more markers. Traditional population genetics methods like AFLPs or something like that, microsatellites, you generally get dozens, maybe hundreds of genetic markers. With a population genomics approach, you get thousands or even tens of thousands of markers. So it gives you much higher resolution. It allows you to detect finer differences between populations that traditional methods would not necessarily detect, and it gives you more statistical power. Specifically, the population genomic approach we use is called DD-RadSeq, double digest RadSeq. It's a method of using restriction enzymes to generate homologous sequences across many individuals, and it has a pretty important advantage over some other methods because as long as you use those same restriction enzymes in that same species, you can actually make comparisons across multiple studies and across multiple years. So it's a really good way to generate a long-term data set. We sequenced our 200 individuals on two lanes of Illumina HiSeq and generated 100 base pair paired-end reads. And then we used the software Stax to identify the informative genetic markers from that data set. We found 13,552 informative loci with 10x coverage, and we set our minimum quality FRED score to 32, which is a very stringent quality score limit for Illumina HiSeq data. So we're very confident in the sequences we have and the data that we have. So these are the results of my first analysis, which is a pairwise FST analysis. FST is a measure of gene flow, wherein high FSTs indicate low gene flow and low FSTs indicate high gene flow. And according to Wright's original interpretations of FST values, anything below 0.05 is considered low FST, which means there's very high gene flow. And you can see across the data set, all of our comparisons of our different populations, all of our pairs, we have below 0.05. So overall, there's very high gene flow across this data set, pretty high admixture among all of our populations. However, there are a few interesting things that pop out here. So these asterisks indicate statistical significance between these populations, and I think that's, even though we have very high gene flow, because we have a high number of markers, we're able to pull out statistical significance where other techniques might not be able to. But what's really interesting is if you look at June cotton and compare that to all five of our croton populations, there are significant differences between June cotton and all of our croton populations. However, in July and in August, that pattern starts to break down where you have some populations that are different and some that are not from the croton. Looking within cotton across June, July, and August, the June cotton is significantly different from the July and August cotton, and then the July and August cotton are more similar. So what we're actually seeing here is that throughout the growing season, the cotton flea hoppers that are present, there's something that's changing about them over the course of the growing season. So we tried to visualize this using a principal components analysis, which the first two principal components they account for about 24% of the variation, if I'm doing that math right. But this is kind of a messy. I don't know if any of you were at my talk yesterday. I have a really nice, clean principal components analysis in my boll weevil work. This one's very messy. But there's a couple interesting things we can pull out of this, if I can get the mouse. First off, our cotton in July and August, our populations from cotton in July and August, overlap with a couple croton populations here. Most of our samples are in this cluster here. However, we have this croton 1 population, which has a really wide spread of diversity, a lot more diversity in that population than any of our other populations. And then we have June cotton in a very tight cluster that's separate from that July and August cotton and these other populations. However, it does overlap with the croton 1 and croton 2 sites. So differences between the different populations, but all of them do seem to be overlapping with the croton populations, although they might be different croton populations. A better way to visualize this might be a structure plot. So the different colors here represent different genotypes, and the percentage of the bar that is a certain color represents the likelihood of that individual belonging to that genotypic group. So for example here in June, these are all these individuals are very likely this green genotype. However, if you look at July and August, there's a lot more variation, and there's these two kind of genotypes that seem to be contributing to the genotypic pool in this month. And similarly, you have a lot of diversity in August. Important to note, all of these different genotypes, while they're different in these different months, they all are occurring again in some croton populations. So returning to our hypotheses regarding estimating gene flow between populations feeding on cotton and those overwintering on croton, we support the null hypothesis that there is high gene flow. Again, these FST values are very, very low. We're detecting these differences because of the high number of markers that we have. And we see no support for HAD, at least in croton and cotton. So with regards to woolly croton serving as a natural refuge, woolly croton and cotton do share genotypes. So that makes cotton a likely a good natural refuge for the purposes of transgenic resistant management. However, we still have this issue of different genotypes colonizing cotton at different types or different times of the year. These different cohorts is what we've termed them. And so the question now is, what are these sources of these different cohorts? Where are these different genotypes coming from? Why are they moving in at different types? I think there may still be a role of host-associated differentiation, because if these different cohorts are associated with different host plants that are senescing at different times, then that might drive a different time for each of these cohorts to move into cotton as their preferred host plant becomes unavailable. So we expanded this study in 2016. We added an additional 367 samples to the 200 that we have. I was hoping to be able to present that data here today, but it's currently on our supercomputing cluster still being analyzed. We added some additional cotton fields in that data set. We resampled the croton sites, and we added some additional croton sites, and we also included some additional alternative host plants. A key one is horse mint, which has been shown to have a genetically associated population with it in the past. So we're thinking that maybe at least one of our cohorts might be associated with horse mint. But that's something I can't answer specifically at this time. But what this is going to allow us to do is look over the course of 2 years, we'll be able to see which genotypes are on which host plants at what time of the year and when they're mixing. We'll be able to see that pattern evolve across 2 years. So just real quickly, something that I did not do for these 200 individuals that I presented to y'all just now, but I have done for the 567 individuals that are currently being reanalyzed, is I removed microbial sequences. And for the most part, the microbial, I think 101 of my samples had more than 10% microbial sequences in that data set. I don't expect that to affect the patterns very much at all, but it is something that we are considering, and I actually would like to analyze this data set separately to see if there are some interesting patterns with the microbes that are associated with these organisms as well. That about wraps it up. I'd like to acknowledge my PI, Greg Sword, and our USDA collaborator, Charles Suh. Funding for this work has come from Monsanto. We've been working with Doug Summerford and Benjamin York. They've been very supportive of this project. Richard Metz is our contact at the Sequencing Center, who helps us with all of our next-generation sequencing. Michael Dickens and Jason Wolf are my collaborators on the bioinformatics side of this work. Derek Hall, Jose Perez, Kristen Hammonds, and Amy Berg, they're associated with the Cell Lab, and they did the croton collection and rearing the insects out from the eggs. And then Zoe Kramer is an undergraduate in Greg's lab that helped me with the DNA extraction. So thanks to them. Thanks to y'all for listening. I'd be happy to take any questions. Yes, sir. Sure, yeah. Yeah, so we didn't sample croton in the summer because we were just in the Brazos Valley for this. We didn't look at Corpus. But yeah, there are variations in the phenology of these different host plants in different geographic areas. It varies from year to year. So we actually looked at the overwintering croton, those stems. We did not look at croton during the season. We looked at just cotton during the season. But we do have this additional data set. We have a variety of wild hosts. Gotcha. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, thank you.